Welcome back to the Rural Roundup, hosted by me, Kerry Hammond. This show is produced in association with the Scottish Government. On today's episode, I'm joined by George Chalmers and Tiffany Stevenson, who discuss all things carbon, carbon audits, emissions, reductions, and more.
Hi, George. How's things?
Great, Tiffany. How's things with you?
Yeah, it's great. It's great having a bit of warmth and a bit of sunshine. It definitely does cheer up the mood.
It is. Basically, what a difference a couple of weeks makes. I'm sure you're exactly the same. Sun is shining. There's warmth. Everybody had really long faces a wee while ago. Couldn't get anything done. Livestock had to stay inside. Nothing was growing. Now, well, everybody's getting towards being sown up. It's a bit later than they'd like. Crops are growing in the field. Grass is growing. Cattle are outside. Ewes and lambs are outside. The countryside's looking wonderful again. It's great.
It's just amazing how fast things change around. But it's great to have seen people being able to catch up. It's just amazing how quickly the work does get done as soon as the window opens for doing it. Mm-hmm. So we're all going to look back at this and laugh at how worried we were about it getting done, because it always does seem to happen. Every year we make it happen, whether it's easy or challenging.
Yeah, and the calendar, well, it is, you get day length and that, and what we're seeing with the crops is that despite the terrible winter and a slow start to spring, we're not that far behind in terms of sticking out recommendations for crops and that. It's absolutely amazing how nature catches up. It's great. It's great.
It really does. Have you been out doing a lot of crop walking?
I'm trying to get out, but obviously we are still, when we're recording this, we are still in the middle of Ajax. So it's squeezing in farm visits here and there.
I'm feeling rather pleased with myself because I've managed to get my last one submitted. So it's a really good feeling that they're all tidied up and finished and they're done for another year. So I'm now beginning to look ahead to EECS because the deadline for EECS is on the 10th of June. So it's just going to be a runaround now to try and make sure we get Farms Walk and those applications filled in on time.
Yeah, there is a wee bit of interest in EECS. Yeah, it's usually from people who've been in before, and there's some good options, and you know, the people who can make it work on their farms, and can, it doesn't seem to interrupt the farming practices too much. They get the best of both worlds, really. They get the, obviously there's the economic incentive, but they're also doing their bit for biodiversity too.
There are definitely lots of benefits of the Agri-Environment Climate Scheme. There's a whole range of different options that farmers could undertake. This could be from planting hedgerows to wade-grazed grassland, moorland management, species-rich grassland, or it could be overwintered stubbles. So there's options that go and suit all different types of farms. So it is great to see that there is interest for people to go back in when they've been in the past, as well as new people coming in as well. There is a slightly later deadline for the organics. So it's just for the agri-environment options, which closes on the 10th of June. But if you've not actually had a chance to think about going into one of the EECS schemes at the moment, you could potentially do a biodiversity audit over the summer. Those are funded by the Farm Advisory Service and is a specialist plan where you can get £1,000 of funding to go towards getting a biodiversity audit. So if you've not had anything to do with these schemes in the past, it's a nice way to get your farm walk, get some suggestions on what you could do to improve.
Yep, that's right. That's right, Tiffany. One option that's particularly common up here, and when it came out, it's actually almost with a view to the future, is a stubble followed by green manure. And when it came out, it's quite a good, to be honest, it's quite a good payment rate. But it means you leave your stubble over the winter and then you sow a green manure. So you sacrifice a growing crop, obviously, but you put in this green manure over the summer, and it gives soil benefits, biodiversity benefits, depends on what your mix you put in. It helps loosen up soil. You put some of them in a taproot, obviously, but it's been quite popular up here. And actually, when you see what's coming further down the line with green covers and things like that. It's let folk dip their toes in the water on that side of things.
Last year, one of my neighbours, he had a beautiful field of phacelia, and it was right next to the village, next to the main road as well. And you should have heard the excitement from everybody in the village about this bright purple field. So not only is it benefiting the farm and the field, but actually it's getting the public engaged as well in what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've a farm not far from the Turriff office that does a number of trials with one of the companies on various different green covers. And last summer there was a number of trials, and it was just like a kaleidoscope of colours, basically different clovers and phacelias and radishes and things like that. So it really brightens up a countryside.
Oh, it definitely does. Definitely does. So once I think I've got through the eeks, I think the next thing that's beginning to call again is doing some carbon audits. When I had people in over IAX and were saying they were wanting to do a carbon audit this year, because it is going to be part of the whole farm plan and they're trying to get organised for next year, I have gone and tried and roped them into telling me which month they were freest for doing it, just to help spread it over the year. But it's great that so many people are interested in doing them now.
I think it's something now that when they first came out, there was a bit of scepticism, and that's natural. But as time's gone on, they've heard more of the same rhetoric in a lot of the companies they're dealing with, and there's grain groups, they're looking for a carbon audit to be done. Nearly all the supply chains now are taking a much closer look at carbon and such like, and measuring your inputs against your outputs, it makes sense, really, when you think about it. It does give you an idea just how well you're actually doing, how efficiently you're producing things.
I think what you said there is how efficiently you're doing things. I think that's what I've definitely noticed doing them. The more efficient the farming business is, the lower the carbon footprint. Because I know I've had some very sceptical people going, why are we measuring carbon? But actually, as soon as you explain it as business efficiency, they start to understand that it depends on what your lambing percentage is, it depends what your grain yield is, and they have a big impact on your carbon footprint. And everyone wants to farm as efficiently as possible and do the best they can do.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Certainly from a cereal side, yield is king. Fertilizer generally makes up about two-thirds of the emissions, and if you're getting more yield relative to your neighbour for the same amount of inputs, then your carbon footprint generally will be lower. It is a measure of efficiency. So yes, it's good. It's relevant. And even the livestock side, again, it just comes back to getting things finished as efficiently as possible, really, and getting as much numbers on the ground as well. So just yield, basically.
There are some farmers who have done a few different carbon audits now over the years. And when they started, they were probably a bit sceptical, thinking they're just finding out about the carbon, but were pleasantly surprised when there were some pointers on how they could go and improve the efficiency on their farm. And that's then allowed them to make changes and either help to reduce costs, increase production. So it's great to have a farmer then coming back a few years later, once you've done another carbon audit as well, and seeing the difference of the improvement that they've made. And they've seen the improvement in their pocket at the end of the day, but it's nice to then get the recognition when you go back to the carbon audit and you see the benefit there as well. So those are the people that have done them for a few years, but there'll be the people that have never gone and done them before. George, where would you say is the best place to start?
I think the thing is as well is you just explain to people that you're not looking at the financial side at all, and you're really looking at their physical ins and their physical outs, really. And the reality is 80% of that information they will probably know or have a very good idea about, whether it's from crop records for fertilizer. They'll have a good idea. They don't have to look very far to get how many cows they put to the bull, stuff like that, how many cattle they've sold over the course of the year, average weights. A lot of the information is pretty easily retrieved. It's just when you start going down into fuels and things like that maybe you need to do quite a bit of digging. But again, it's not that difficult either to find that information.
So all the information is over a 12-month period, which at least it gives you an idea of how long you're covering. And it doesn't matter if you start it from the 1st of January, you could start it from lambing till lambing, you could do harvest till harvest, you could do your financial year, whatever is easiest to pull the information together. There's no set time period as long as it's a 12-month period.
I think that's the other point is it's probably easier than it would have been 5 years ago because everybody's now gone into digital accounts. So you can set your year end to suit your production system essentially and make it work for you and pull out that 12 months information as long as if you choose to do another one in a year's time or a couple of years' time, you're trying to capture that same time frame so you've got a bit of consistency.
I definitely have had the farmers that have roped their accountants into sending me the information.
Mm-hmm. So, Tiffany, you enter all your information into Carbon Audit and it spews out a pile of figures, pile of information. What's it actually telling you? It's telling you about your different emissions. There's obviously carbon dioxide, there's methane, nitrous oxide. Where do these generally come from and what do they mean?
So the Carbon Audit will break all your figures down so you can go and see where they've all come from. So the methane, that's come from the enteric fermentation process in livestock, so ruminant livestock, so that'll be your cattle and your sheep. So nitrous oxide, the main source of that is probably from your fertilizers, and then carbon dioxide, that will be coming from things like the fuel that you've put into your tractor as well. And there's also including embedded emissions as well. So this will go and include the emissions for the likes of fertilizer, for example, of the production of the fertilizer and then the transportation of the fertilizer to your farm. The same with stock feed, it will include the production process of that as well. So there will be emissions coming from those sources of your bought-in inputs.
When I'm going through a carbon audit, quite often I'll get people going on about fuel. And they seem to think that fuel is a massive part of it. In reality, fuel is relatively small. It's important, but there's much bigger emission sources out there in a typical carbon audit. I think that would be fair to say. Fertilizer, the fermentation, the livestock, and also when you come back to your nitrous oxide as well. What do you feel about, you know, the different figures? Where do you think the key emission sources are?
I think on a livestock farm, you tend to see that the methane is probably the highest source of emissions. On an arable farm, you tend to see that fertilizer is the main source of emissions. In a mixed farm, it probably could be 50-50 between those two, and it just depends on what the split of the enterprises are. Fuel is definitely something that's not such a big source of emissions. You probably see it more on an organic system. If you've got organic cereal farmer who doesn't have the livestock and isn't using fertilizer, that's probably when you start seeing the fuel taking a greater percentage off the emissions. The other thing that's worth noting as well is when you're looking at the carbon audits, because nitrous oxide, methane and carbon dioxide have different global warming potential, they go and convert it into carbon dioxide equivalents. So that means that methane and nitrous oxide are comparable to carbon dioxide. So then you'll end up with one figure and it will take this into account. So you'll then get your figure for, say, your cereals, you've grown your winter wheat, and you'll get the figure for carbon dioxide equivalents per kilogram of output. So then you can see exactly what the emissions are from that product that you're making.
Occasionally, you'll be doing a carbon audit and you will be doing it for somebody who could have half a dozen turbines or something like that, and they'll be saying, I produce all this electricity, renewable, supply it to the grid, whatever. Therefore, my agricultural produce has got a negative carbon footprint. What would you say to that?
You jumped straight into the difficult questions, George. I think the difficulty is when you're looking at what's on the farm as a business as a whole and what is part of the agricultural production. So the same question seems to pop up about forestry and woodlands as well as with renewables as well. So if you're looking at your carbon footprint of your beef that you produced, that's not going to take into account the forestry that you've got on the farm. It's not going to take into account the renewables you've got. There will be some benefit from the renewables because you're potentially not having to bring in electricity and import it from off farm. So there could be some benefits there for what you use for lighting, for example, in your steading. But it's not counted as part of your beef emissions, same with whatever you're producing. Whereas if you're looking at it on a whole business scale, that's when you see the benefits.
Yes, yes, yes. So it's, yes, the actual production processes, they still have their emissions essentially. But your whole business as a whole, yes, it can be a different set of numbers, exactly.
I think it's worth just being a bit clearer on the difference between carbon neutral or carbon negative and net zero, because I know there's been a lot of confusion around them and you see a lot in the media, and it's very easy just to pick up on little bits without fully understanding it. So for carbon neutrality, this is looking at your scope 1 and scope 2 emissions. You may have heard about large businesses offsetting all their emissions by buying forestry, but they've not actually made any effort to reduce the emissions that they've been producing in their business. So the Competition Markets Authority and Advertising Standards Agency have banned being able to say that a business is carbon neutral. Whereas on the other hand, net zero, this includes your scope 1, 2, as well as your scope 3 emissions. And what is crucial with net zero is that the businesses are making an effort to reduce their emissions. There may be an element of offsetting within the business as well, but this is just a small portion of it, with businesses working to reduce the emissions. So as a farmer, once you've got your carbon audit, you've got to get a baseline to start with, and that's the starting point. And then if you're wanting to look to be a net zero farm, that's when you're going to have to start looking at how you're going to reduce your emissions. What changes can you make on your farm to reduce those emissions? So George, for an arable farm, what are some of the suggestions that people could potentially do on their farm to reduce their emissions?
There's quite a lot. I mean, as I said earlier, you know, yield is king, but that's up to a point. It kind of comes to getting fertilizer efficiency as well. Are you doing everything to make sure you are getting the best for your fertilizers? Is your pH is right? And I know it becomes a wee bit of a cliche after a while, but it's getting the basics right. Even things like getting your establishment at the right time. Obviously, this year's weather going against us, but even in a back end, we notice a big difference in people trying to establish crops first half of September as opposed to the second half. So, you know, timeliness of operations, and even thinking about some of the products you're using. We're starting to see different types of fertilizers now with got different emissions on them. So there's a lot of different things here. A lot of it just comes back to being more efficient. How can you reduce your inputs or get more bang for your buck, basically, by pushing your yield further?
But more bang for your buck is definitely what all farmers are looking for. And I think on the livestock side as well, it's kind of a similar story. It's how are you going to be able to increase your output? How are you going to have more lambs and calves on the ground? How are you going to increase your live weight gain? And those sort of things can have a big impact on your carbon footprint, but it also then hopefully has an impact on how much money you make at the end of the day.
Yeah, and the industry, supply industry, is waking up to this as well, and they know that this is the way things are going. This is the direction of travel. And we're starting to see more like methane inhibitors and for diets and stuff like that. And even, you know, you come to the non-ruminant side, is there ways of replacing soya with homegrown proteins and different ways of just reducing this carbon emissions, overall emissions. So there's lots of different things there. A carbon audit, you should be able to benchmark, and that gives you a starting point. If you're behind the curve, or if you're on the curve, how can you improve it further? It can maybe just enough for you to just look at your figures relative to the average or the top third, and it'll maybe just highlight some of the differences in your business and where there maybe is some areas that you can just make tweaks. It doesn't have to be major. It can just be wee tweaks here and there, and that can just make a big difference. You know, many a meikle makes a muckle, so they say, and it's just a little tweaks can make a big difference.
They definitely can make a big difference. I have found using the benchmarking is so helpful, because you'll have a farmer that will argue that they can't go and reduce how much purchase feeds they buy in to feed their cattle on. And then when they see the benchmark and realise that their emissions for feed is 2, 3, 4 times higher than what the average is, it suddenly just makes them stop and think that maybe there is another way they can do it. And I think it's a good way to make people be able to understand that there is other ways of doing things. And it's not saying they're going to reduce it altogether, but there could be a few small things that they could do that would reduce that figure and could help out their business.
It's quite interesting sometimes in the data collection process. People go and they'll gather up that information, and you'll be going through the carbon audit and typing it in with them and such like, and they'll say, "I never knew we used as much as that." And quite often that's a wake-up call. I never knew. Never knew we were using that much feed. I didn't know we used that much fertilizer. I didn't know we used that much diesel. And that's sometimes just the wake-up call, just to think, maybe we just need to be a bit more, think things through a wee bit more. Is there another way sometimes? So,
but all the figures that we are putting into the carbon audit are probably figures you're not really using for anything else. Like, you've got them all there because you've gone and bought your fertilizer, you bought your feed, but no one actually ever really stops and looks at them afterwards, whereas this goes and pulls them all together at once. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a good opportunity to evaluate what you're doing.
So Tiffany, it's fair to say that there is still some support available to help with doing a carbon audit.
Yeah, there is definitely support available. So through Preparing for Sustainable Farming by the Scottish Government, they have got £500 of funding to go towards a carbon audit. This is aimed at people who have never done a carbon audit before. If you haven't done a carbon audit in the last 3 years, or if you've gone and made some significant changes to your business, you can also get the funding for it. So that's funding is paid to you after you've done your carbon audit. So go ahead, get it done with your advisor, and then you claim the funding back after you've paid for it with the proof of your receipt. Not proof of your receipt. Claim it back after you've done it all, and you'll have the proof of your invoice and a copy of your bank statement as well to show that you've had it done and paid for it. The Farm Advisory Service also has funding for carbon audits. The funding is slightly different in how you apply for it. So for the funding, you need to apply for the carbon audit first, and then you can get the carbon audit done by an FBAS advisor. And then once the carbon audit has been complete, the advisor will then be able to claim back the funding that's available. There's also a specialist plan available through the Farm Advisory Service. So this could be if you're wanting to take it another step further. So there's £1,000 of specialist funding. So this will be to go more in depth to look at carbon mitigation. So it could be to draw up a plan over the next 5-10 years of the changes the business is wanting to make and how they're going to make them as well. So it's definitely, if you've done a couple of carbon audits, is a great way to go and dig in a bit further. For some of you, this could feel a bit daunting and unknown, because there seems to be a lot of new words and terminology that we do start using around carbon audits. So have a look on the Farm Advisory Service website. There is some great resources which will give you more information about carbon audits and carbon. And if you're wanting to learn about all the basics, there is carbon literacy for rural industries, and that's a great introductory way of learning about carbon, and it's just a great stepping stone to get started. It seems to be something that's not going to be going away, so it'd be a good idea to get the basics installed first and a better understanding, so then you're in a stronger position going forward.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Rural Roundup. We'll see you back here on the 19th of June with our next episode. This episode was presented and produced by me, Kerry Hammond, featured guests George Chalmers and Tiffany Stevenson, and was edited by Cameron Waugh.
The Farm Advisory Service Podcast. Audio advice on livestock, crops and soils, environment, rural business, and more. Brought to you in association with the Scottish Government.